Awesome. Welcome to another week of the Impact Hustle with myself, Eric Granks, and my co-host, Brandon Mills.
How's it going?
Awesome. Today, I'm super excited for our special guest, Lester Lundbad. He and I met during COVID. Yeah. You know, when the world shut down, you know, there's that old country song, "Where were you in the world? When the world shut down," or something like that. I can't remember how it was worded, but I know where I was. I was on this stupid app called Clubhouse, and that's where I met Lester.
Yep. Yeah, time flies for sure.
Yeah, I met Lester during lockdowns as well, but it was in person. We were being risky, which we knew we weren't being risky, but no, it was awesome. We met during I guess a little bit prior to our Bunker Labs cohort.
Yeah, it was literally a week before, I think, before that that cohort started, because we both found out that the other was going to be in the Bunker Labs cohort.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And that was back when Dave Berlin was there and Mario and all that. Yeah.
Yep.
It was good times. It was when everybody was trying to figure out what the hell to do to try to navigate the crazy world that was the lockdowns and the government response to this virus that they've played up as being something crazier than it actually was. But here we are today. We're still alive.
Yeah. Did they shut down? I mean, I know they don't work with them anymore, but during COVID, did they close down the WeWork offices, or was Bunker Labs able to meet in WeWork at that time?
WeWork was pretty good. It was all in person. I guess from my understanding is it was just after like the initial lockdowns, like the initial lockdowns, I think everything shut down. And I'm kind of foggy on the timeline of to when we did our Bunker Labs cohort, Lester. Was it 22 that we did that, or was it 21?
It was it started in 21. Yeah.
Okay. In the
fall. Oh wait, no, actually no, I'm sorry. No, it started in 22, yeah.
The spring. Yeah, so by that point, things were starting to open, just with a bunch of weird, crazy, nonsensical rules that they decided to put into place.
Yeah.
Well, Lester, I remember, let's dive in a little bit and start talking about you. I remember the early conversations that we'd have. So people who aren't familiar with Clubhouse, it was basically like an audio version of a Zoom call. You know, people go in a room and, you know, who knows who you would talk to. I met some pretty influential figures out there, including people like Lester. And, you know, I remember I was running, I was co-running it with Frank Manto at the time, an entrepreneur, veteran entrepreneur room. And Lester would always come in there and, you know, he started talking about wanting to, you know, create some kind of chamber. And so I remember those old days. So why don't you kind of talk to us about your beginning journey of, you know, coming up with the passion around creating the Southern Nevada Veteran Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, thanks to both of you for having me on your podcast. Really appreciate it. I'm honored to be here. You know, like going back to Clubhouse and a lot of those conversations that took place during that time, you know, like it was really kind of a perfect storm for a platform like that, because everyone was at home, literally could not leave our homes. And, but everyone also didn't want to be on more Zoom calls than they needed to be on, because everyone was sort of, you know, exhausted from that. So Clubhouse turned out to be a perfect platform to where you didn't need to be on video, but you could literally just turn on your phone, open an app, hit unmute, and then you're talking to people about whatever your areas of interest might be. So then for me, I found myself in spaces where a lot of discussion was happening around entrepreneurship and also veteran resources at Clubhouse. And, you know, I really don't get to talk about this a lot, but it was really those initial conversations that took place there, and a lot of the people that I met there. Some of the people that I met there was, you know, like Brandon, obviously, you know, Monica Fullerton. That was actually mm-hmm. met Monica. Jay Salters out in Maryland. That's how I met Jay. A lot of people. Yeah, Frank, like you mentioned, Frank Mantel. That's how I met him. Eric, that's, you know. So
I think.
What's that?
Josh Lyon, or had you already known him?
I already knew him from previous. Yeah, he had taken my photos once before, so that's how we met. But then I ran into him there, and it was just very interesting the way that all played out. But then a lot of the conversations that were happening there, it had to do with again entrepreneurship, and then also just veteran resources, you know. And it was a great place to exchange ideas and have discussion. And as those discussions were happening, I was hearing about a lot of these different programs, like Bunker Labs, like Act Now Education, which is run by Jay Salters out in Washington, D.C., and all of these other things that I really was not familiar with at the time, you know, whether it was programs or just services that were available, you know, different benefits like having a premium LinkedIn account if you're a veteran. Like, I didn't know that, you know, so then I was like, as these discussions were happening, I'm thinking in my head, I was like, how are all of these things not in one place? You know, like, you know, because it's very difficult to navigate, just like it's difficult to navigate the veteran landscape in general, you know, when it comes to resources. So really, you know, again, I don't really say this too much, but that it was really those early conversations in Clubhouse that exposed me to all of these different available resources that put the idea in my head of starting something like a Southern Nevada Veterans Chamber of Commerce, because I was sitting there wondering, like, how come I don't know about these things, and where do I find resources, you know, that can help me? So yeah, so that's how that came about.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I, you know, and I was always in full support. You know, it was always interesting. You know, I'm one of these people that I try to support anybody's initiative as much as I can. And, you know, I always, you know, as you know, I always believed in it. Like I jumped in and said, yeah, I'll become part of the chamber, even though I didn't live in the state of Nevada. I'm like, yeah, let's do it, man. Let's, you know, and I didn't just do it for one organization. I did it for, you know, for two that I had at the time. Now I've branched into some other things as well, but, I think it's important. You know, I think that's a topic just in itself that we don't need to dive down, but I think it's important that people look for ways to support others, you know, both personally and in business ventures. Even if you don't get the same value out of maybe, you know, somebody who's local there in Nevada, you know, of course has a whole lot more opportunity to get involved with things in the chamber, you know, like your coffee conversations and, you know, and your different meetups and things like that versus someone where, you know, once in a while I show up in Vegas and it may or may not correlate with something going on, but it's the fact that I could support, and that was what was really important to me. And so I think that's important for people to remember.
Well, on the Clubhouse meetings that you guys were doing, was it business oriented, or what was it, just more social? What was the, what brought you guys all together initially?
I mean, it depends what room you were in Clubhouse.
It was a little bit of both, really, because it was actually pretty ingenious the way that all of it was structured at the time, because it was broken up. They called them rooms, which were just, you know, dedicated spaces for discussion on a topic. And you could see the title of the discussion topic before you even went into the room. So you would click the room and say it said something about, I don't know, like a veteran resources, ... Right. And you go in there, and if you connect and you resonate with what's being talked about, the default setting is that you're in like an audience setting, meaning that you're listen only. But then what you could do at that point is request to be like on the stage, and then what would happen is then your audio feature would then be enabled, but then you would just have to remain manually muted. And then you could raise your hand just like you can on a virtual call, and then request to share whatever input you want to share. And then the whole discussion takes place from there. Or you could just stay in the audience, and if you don't connect with what's being talked about, you can just leave, you know. And but it just became a very honestly, it became kind of addictive, really, you know, like during that time, because there was no one else to talk to. There was no one, you know, nowhere to really go. And yeah, a lot of the connection that was taking place there, it was in a lot of ways, it was kind of like LinkedIn on steroids.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Great example of that. You know, I mentioned some of the people that I connected with, if I had just reached out on LinkedIn, would have never happened. Was like, you know, I did a partnership with Grant Cardone on the nonprofit stuff. I pitched the former CEO of T-Mobile, and he donated a bunch of money to the nonprofit. I mean, like, there's all these different people out there that you normally couldn't get in front of, but yeah, through Clubhouse you could. When Clubhouse first started, it was like an invite only app. Like, not anybody could just join Clubhouse. It eventually evolved to that, and when it did, it got a little too cluttered. And but at the very beginning, it was like a very exclusive, you know, and because it was exclusive, you could talk to pretty much anyone, because it wasn't just a bunch of just yahoos that are on this app. But it eventually did evolve to that. And it really did. Like he said, it became addictive. And I liked it because I could learn. Like, there was different areas that I'm not strong in business. You know, everybody has strengths and weaknesses. There was areas that I wanted to learn more about, and I could go into a room that was based on that and ask experts different questions. And so it became really powerful in that. What I didn't like is these quote millionaire and billionaire that were always on there, you know, claiming that most of them probably hadn't made $1 million, but they were claiming they were, and trying to like teach on that. So there was pros and cons, but yeah, at the time it was a really incredible, I think it was really incredible for the time and place.
Yeah. Yeah. The timing was perfect for it, really.
But nice.
But after things went back to normal after the pandemic, then it didn't take long, you know, like people just didn't see the use for it anymore, because people are just getting back to their normal lives. And like, why do that? You know, like, but then, yeah. But at the time, like for a good year, I think it was probably a year, it was just very, very helpful. So
I also learned a powerful lesson by them on business, which was, so Clubhouse was offered a lot of money by Twitter to buy their app. And Clubhouse said no. And when they said no, they kept it private. Twitter created Twitter Spaces. Spotify said, hey, we're going to copy it. And they created the Green Room. And then Facebook had a version. But before Facebook had a version, Mark Zuckerberg would show up and join rooms on Clubhouse. Mm. Kind of funny. But then he created... But then he created his own. But they said no, and then Clubhouse crashed, and they lost all their market share.
I bet, like, they're kicking themselves, like, now.
They could have exited at a lot of money, because it was. I know people that were investors on the back end of Clubhouse, and I know what was offered. It was a lot of money, and they turned it down. And it was a lesson. Like, if I get offers on some of my businesses, it's like I need to like actually evaluate, like.
Yeah.
Do I need to be greedy, or should I just take an offer?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, is somebody mowing their lawn at your place?
Yeah, you guys can hear that? Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Inside, so I'm on mute if I'm not talking, then, if you guys can hear that. So.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, it's just our listeners can look forward to, you know, pictures of a beautiful landscape.
Yeah, you don't have to mute. You're the star.
Yeah, you're the star. Don't mute.
You're the star. Don't mute.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't expecting that, but
yeah.
But yeah. That's how me and Eric connected, and several other people. It was very useful, and it was even cooler to run into those people later, and build relationships beyond that. You know, Brian Arrington, he was another person that I connected with on there, from Vets to Industry, and like a year later, he ended up coming out here to Vegas with a group of, you know, members of Vets to Industry, and it was great to meet all of them in person. Yeah, so it was really cool. It's really cool.
So the formation of Southern Nevada Veterans Chamber of Commerce, I think you had already started it prior to the Bunker Labs cohort. I think you joined Bunker Labs with SNVCC, like as the organization that you were a part of.
Yeah,
but it was new though. Like you had just started it up. Is that right?
It was brand new. Yeah, like it had literally started maybe 2 months before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was brand new. But you know, like that collaboration with Bunker Labs at the time was helpful because, you know, it was like a lot of like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Eric, you know, you mentioned Mario Mitchell, Dave Berlin, you know, they were running the cohort at the time. Then Monica Fullerton became involved as a third ambassador because she was in the cohort before us. And, you know, just became really good friends with several of those people, you know, and you know, Kevin Knight, he was in the cohort before us, and he's still a good friend till now, you know. So like a lot of the connection points that were made through that initial experience were really positive for me, you know, just to kind of see a nice snapshot of what things could look like, you know, as far as expanding the community. So.
What were some of the challenges in creating something, you know, from scratch that you came across? Because the first event you did was huge. There was so much support. Like, I mean, you were able to grab the attention of, you know, the Vegas community really, really fast. I don't know how you did that.
Yeah. So really that was really through collaboration with Bunker Labs, you know, because, you know, I was I had a lot of help with that. I can't take credit for that first event because, you know, Monica, she had, you know, through one of her contacts, she was friends with the owners of that venue and you mm-hmm. know, set that up. David Mario, they helped to set up the outreach, you know, and the promotion of the event. And for me, it was just really a matter of setting up like some of the more detailed logistics, like coordinating with folks like yourself as a vendor for the event to set up like the signage and the, you know, eventually the laser engraved name badges that we made for our members, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Vendors like you. But so it was a collaborative effort for sure, you know, but then it was brand new to me. So I'll be the first to admit, you know, like that was every single one of those events in the very beginning were a pretty big learning experience for me because each one of them was super stressful. And
what were some of the pitfalls that you didn't anticipate that you came across that were more of a challenge than you thought would be?
I mean, I would say as that flow of events started to grow, especially within that first 6 months, because it became such a regular thing and immediately, it became very clear that outreach needed to be a very regular recurring thing in order to keep that momentum going. And we did have a lot of positive momentum in the very beginning. We still do, but in the very beginning, it was like hosting one large event and then turning around. And then after that, it was the holidays. So then after the holidays, then you have to jump into another event to keep things going. And I didn't really anticipate having a full count or having a full calendar of events in advance and the value of that and being able to execute on an entire calendar rather than one event at a time, because like one event at a time is literally a nonstop process and it's
mm-hmm.
it's way more stressful than it needs to be. So that was a big learning lesson really for that entire first year of what not to do. So, yeah.
What are some of the things, the positive things that you realized going into it that you weren't anticipating either? Like what are some of the things that, you know, I guess some takeaways of that whole process that were, I guess, were a pleasant surprise?
I would say just, you know, kind of like what you just mentioned a few minutes ago, just how positively everything was received by the community and how that relationship with the community, in my opinion, the best way to cultivate any of these relationships, and it's still the case now, the best way to cultivate these relationships is through organic relationship building, not mm-hmm. through, you know, hard selling or, you know, being pushy. Like, nobody likes that, you know? So, the draw for a lot of these events was that a lot of the relationship building was happening in a very organic, natural way. Like, people were basically literally making friends that could apply to their business. And, you know, that's the best way to do it, in my opinion, you know, because then you build trust, you build relationships, you understand the credibility that people have in their space, and you can learn more about them just through building friendships. And, you know, I think that was probably the most valuable thing that came, that, and that still comes from a lot of, you know, a lot of the events that we host. But then back then there was a lot of difficulty, a lot of challenges in executing those events, but then that was a big positive. And that kind of became a big part of our branding too in the community, because a lot of people came to see that was some of the value that they were getting from our events. You know, there was a lot of consistent feedback we were getting that they would be seeing veterans that, it wasn't like the same 15 veterans that they were seeing at every single. It was always like new people that were being drawn out from the community. And it was, you know, so that was added value for a lot of folks.
For my company, it was fantastic. It was such a great way to meet a lot of people from similar backgrounds. You know, I see the veteran community, at least locally, is one of the strongest support systems that I've ever been a part of. And then, you know, just this last weekend with the gala, just kind of pulled it all together. And it was just, it was kind of an emotional time for me. I was just like trying to hold it together, because the power of it, you know, it's so genuine and so authentic, and it's incredible. And I credit a lot of my success to, you know, just being in that community and being around people that care.
Yeah. I could say, like you said, that the community, I'm an outsider on two fronts. I'm an outsider if I'm out of state, and I'm an outsider because I'm a veteran dependent versus a veteran, where a lot of those groups are vets. And I would have to beyond agree that the community that's within that the Las Vegas area in the veteran space is second to none. I mean, I've ran a nonprofit for, and that's over 15 years and of community. I want to jump into some of the other areas, but you know, like Mission Continues and also Merging Vets with Players, things like that. But before we jump into that, why don't you tell us, like, two of the most impactful events through your years of the chamber that you put together?
Well, one of them I would say would probably be this past weekend's gala. It was very special to me to see the way that came together. It was the second one that we've hosted. The first one was held on the Las Vegas Strip a year and a half ago at the Aria. And that one was special too, you know, because, you know, for a lot of reasons, especially because it was the first one that we, first gala that we had put together. And it was a ton of work. It was a year's worth of coordination. It was just so much work that went into that. And the same thing applies for this second one that we just got through this past Saturday. But the reason why I feel like this second one was a little bit more special was just because, you know, like, we were able to apply a lot of lessons learned from the first ones, and then also a lot of lessons learned from all of the events that we've put together in general, and make this past weekend's event a success. You know, like, the feedback that we've gotten from this past weekend's event has been nothing but positive. It's been overwhelming, really, on how positive it was for people who attended. And to hear that coming out on the back end, you know, from all of the work that went into it with our team, with our planning committee, who put that event together, it was really refreshing to hear. So I would say this past weekend's event, over at the Durango, our second Veteran Awards Gala, would be one of them for sure. And then I would say the other two, if I had to pick one, it would be the very first Vet Fest that we hosted. It was in collaboration with the Howard Hughes Group over in downtown Summerlin, which is, for those listeners who are not here in Las Vegas, that's a shopping center that's here in West Las Vegas, very like highly attended, lots of foot traffic type of shops, shopping center. And it's very strategic the way that we place that event, because we want to drive as much of that foot traffic as possible into the dozens of exhibits that we have on display from our veteran community out on the lawn. And that they call it the lawn in downtown Summerlin. We try to use that as much as possible, along with various engagements like live music, games, food trucks, etc., to try to draw as many people out and engaging with those business exhibits and also nonprofit resource exhibits that we have on display at the lawn. So that first one, the first FetFest that we hosted back in October of 2022, we were just approaching a year in the community, and we launched this VetFest event with Howard Hughes of all groups, you know, because that's already a huge group. And I was really proud that we were able to that was through my friend Chris Crooks, who was a day one supporter with you know, with what we had going on with the chamber. And he helped to cultivate that relationship with Howard Hughes. And that was huge. That was a huge deal, you know, because like there was LED billboard advertising for us, for our vendors and exhibitors. And it was just a beautiful thing to see all that come together. So
yeah, that timing was perfect. We had just recently launched in the Las Vegas market for, you know, 22 Salute. Salute, and, yeah. And at the same time, around that time, you know, it was like 2 months later or something, that, you know, you were doing your first event for VetFest. And like it was great. You know, it allowed us to expand the visibility that we were in the Las Vegas market, as well as be able to, you know, help let the veteran community know, like, our brand is here, you know, to support your community. Like, that's the whole reason we exist. And so it was special to be part of that first VetFest. And you know, we made it two or three years, I guess. But we missed this last one. But hopefully I make the upcoming one this year. So
yeah. Well, you know, now we've expanded that into two versions of that per year. So we'll have an indoor version in the hotter months here in Las Vegas, and then we're moving, and eventually we're going to be moving that outdoor event with Howard Hughes over to the spring season. So this fall will be the last fall season that we host it there, and instead we'll be hosting it in probably late April or May in 2026. So
awesome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Mission Continues, both their, you know, what their organization represents and some of the work you do. I know that through the Veterans Connection, we've done some partnership with you, not as much as probably would be helpful, but you know, we've tried to help on some of that stuff as well. So why don't you talk through that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so the Mission Continues is one organization that was actually brought into Las Vegas through the development of the Southern Nevada Veterans Chamber of Commerce, coincidentally. And the way that happened was because a good friend of mine that lives here in Las Vegas, he's born and raised here in Vegas. His name is Julian Serrano. He's not a veteran. He's a huge veteran supporter. I met him in the very, very beginning of the development of the chamber. And him and I stayed connected, and probably about 9 months to a year into the development of the Southern Nevada Veterans Chamber, him and I reconnected in a big way. He reached out. He said, hey, he had been working for the Mission Continues the entire time. He was their senior director of technology on a national level. So he was responsible for all of their, you know, basically their Salesforce access, you know, like for all of their different chapters across the United States. But he happened to live here in Las Vegas. And he told me, he was like, hey, you know, I'm from Las Vegas. I'm born in Las Vegas. I'd really like to see a Mission Continues platoon brought up here in Las Vegas. What would you think about helping with that? And the initial thought to me was like, well, we have all of these businesses that are tied to the Southern Nevada Veterans Chamber of Commerce, and a great way, again, like what we were saying earlier, as far as relationship building, a great way to build relationships and cultivate relationships is through contributing value first, and you know, finding a way to demonstrate value. And then hopefully that comes back around, you know, like that's my personal belief. So, So I felt like, okay, we have all these businesses. Why not showcase them contributing to the community? The Mission Continues has an established budget of resources for us to use to execute those projects. All we really have to do is gather the people. And at that point, we had access to lots of people. So we were like, okay, well, this makes perfect sense. All we have to do is just, you know, put the word out, organize some events with collaborative partners like US Vets, like the Shine a Light Foundation, the LGBTQ Center here in Las Vegas, a couple of different food pantries that we've partnered with. The Just One Project is another more recent partner that we've built a relationship with. And it's all very, just service driven, you know, and being able to have an opportunity to contribute value to the community, but promote your business while doing that. You know, like I remember, I think it was two summers ago at Brandon's shop, we hosted a school supply drive in front of his shop. And it was and all of those school supplies were contributed by, not necessarily by the Mission Continues, but they were contributed by a lot of partners that wanted to support groups like the Mission Continues. So we had this, you know, resources, you know, basically donations that were contributed to purchase those school supplies. And then strategically, we were able to find a way to draw people to a veteran-owned business like Total Promotion Company and say, hey, you know, come pick up your school supplies and find out about this veteran-owned business, you know. And it was just a great way to execute on something like that that already had resources built into it. So that was kind of how that came about with the Mission Continues.
That was a really cool event too.
It was pretty hot that day, though. The only thing.
It was. Yeah. And then there was other times too. You coordinated, and we did something similar with the toy drive. It was a couple Christmases ago, not this last one. I think it was the one prior, where you could probably speak better to that event, because we were kind of the distribution center for that. People would come here and pick up toys to take out to people that had lost, their fathers or whatever. I can't remember exactly what the thing was, but it was going to children that were impacted in a way that their resources were quite limited.
Yeah. So, and thanks again for being involved with that. That was a big deal for sure. What happened there, and it was very short notice, I was contacted by a friend of mine, Amy Frost, out here in the community, and she works very closely with the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. She's a board member for one of their programs, which is called Adopt-A-Cop. And she reached out about two, maybe 3 days before all of this happened, saying, hey, the chair for Adopt-A-Cop, he got injured. I think he injured himself, and he wasn't mobile in a way that he could distribute these toys the way that it was originally planned. And he had all these toys stacked up in his garage in his house that were supposed to go to kids here in the Las Vegas Valley whose either their dads or their granddads were incarcerated, and those gifts were selected by their dads or their granddads who were incarcerated. And we wanted to make sure that those gifts got to those kids. So when the word got back to me, then the first idea was like, who has a central location in Las Vegas where we can stage all of these toys and arrange for pickups to happen? And so I think we arranged like 30 or 40 pickups or something like that of people.
the whole front area was just stacked from like the floor to the ceiling. Like it was hard to walk through.
but it was awesome though to see the community come together and to have a central hub of, you know, physical hub for people to come to. It turned out to be Brandon's shop where people could come and go pick up their toys. They had a route. It was all based on zip code. And like, we're like, yeah, go to this zip code. Here's five addresses. Go drop off these toys. And we had like 30 people doing that. It was awesome. And it all happened within three days, I think. And so it was really cool. You know, like a lot of the engagement in the first, definitely the first 2-3 years, you know, for the chamber since its inception, has been based around community building and just kind of showcasing how our veteran community can really add value through not only just adding value as an individual veteran or an individual business in the veteran community, but how the whole community comes together and does things like this. It's been really cool to be a part of, for sure.
The name of this podcast is The Impact Hustle, and I feel like you embody that so well, and that, you know, and that you everything you do, you know, has so much impact on the community, and of all the people that hustle, and you do so much, Lester. It's an incredible honor to be your friend and to know you, and it's been a fantastic journey, and I'm super excited to see, you know, what's next. What is next? What's on your horizon?
Oh man, I have a couple of ideas that I'm working on right now. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too much, but it's some stuff that I'm working on with one of my closest family members. Actually, it's a business idea that I'm going to be helping my sister out in the Temecula area to kind of rebrand and combine some other local connections that I have with certain things. Yeah, so you guys will be seeing some stuff from me pretty soon. I'm pretty excited about it. So.
That means we'll have to have you come back on to talk about it.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
I would be happy to.
Yeah, I look forward to it. And I echo what Brandon said. You know, it's always interesting every time I get a call from you and it's a new project on your plate. And I'm like, Lester, how are you able to do all this on your plate? But it's always impact based. I do want to talk a little bit about MVP, but before we do that, you know, one of the events that that's cool that you do every year that we try to, you know, financially support. One of the other ones that you mentioned, I think we sent stuff for the, you know, the school supplies and stuff. For us being outside of state, it's easier for us to financially support. I think one of the other ones that we've supported that's really cool, which I think is in a partnership with Mission Continues and Shine a Light, is, you know, the bottle waters during the heat of the summer.
Oh yeah.
I think that's a really cool project as well.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, and really, that's all just really based on contributions from partners like 22 Salute, Veterans Connection, and just folks being able to put in into a pot of resources. So to really explain what all of that is, so there's a group out here that I engaged with, I built a relationship with, probably about pretty early on. I would say like within that first year of developing everything with the chamber. And this group is called the Shine a Light Foundation, and their mission is about as raw as it gets, really. You know, like their mission is outreach based for the homeless community, but specifically the portion of the homeless community in Las Vegas that lives in the underground tunnels underneath Las Vegas. And a lot of their board members, a lot of their staff members used to live in the tunnels. So they've been at the, you know, at like in the worst parts of their life that they could be. And they've been inspired by their own challenges to help lift other people up. So I, you know, formed this relationship with them. It was really just from reaching out directly. I'd heard about them from a couple of friends and knew that they were on YouTube a little bit. And that was all that I really knew. So I ended up reaching out. It was actually my friend, Nine, Brandon. I know, you know, Nine.
Yeah.
Nine, he was the first person to tell me about them. And so Nine was actually the first person to bring me out there with them to go help with their Saturday outreach. And again, it's about as raw as you can imagine. It's literally, you know, drive over to a tunnel, mm-hmm. get out of your car, walk into the tunnel and go talk to some people that are living in the tunnels, you know, and tell them that, hey, you know, like here's some bottled water. Here's a granola bar. Here's a bottle of Gatorade, whatever it is. But hey, by the way, all of us that are not living in this tunnel have not forgotten about you. Here's a bracelet with a phone number on it that you can call if you're ready to come out of here. And if you're not ready today, save this bracelet and call us when you're ready. And we'll be back next Saturday. That's literally all they do, you know? And it's,
I love that.
Such a huge thing. When I say that's all they do, I mean, like, that's such a huge thing, but it's so simple and it's so, you know, just to the core of helping another human being. And mm-hmm. so the first time that I went out there with the Shine a Light Foundation, and I want to say at this point, it's been a while since I've been out there with them, but I've probably been out there with them maybe about a dozen times, like going into the tunnels, and it's always a really eye-opening experience. But the very first time that I went out, the guide that we were with that morning, I was having conversation with him and he was telling me, he was like, yeah, you know, really like the number one scarcity in resources that we have right now is bottled water. And he started to explain it to me and he was telling me that their volunteers that show up on Saturday morning were bringing cases of bottled water with them to distribute that morning. And I was like, man, that's not a great way to do it, you know, without how important your mission is, you know, like how can we help, you know? So then basically what ended up happening was I reached out to the staff members at that time for the Mission Continues. And I told them the situation. I was like, hey, is there a way for us to turn this into a service project and contribute some resources to gathering some bottled water? And so we got a bunch of volunteers together to help load that bottled water, to get all that stuff into their office. But it turned into about $1,500 worth of bottled water that was delivered to their office, which was about 7 pallets. Excuse me. About 7 pallets of bottled water that we purchased from Lowe's, had it delivered directly to their office on a flatbed. And they were stocked up for the summer, you know, and that was the intention, was for them to not have to worry about something like bottled water for them to do their, you know, to, for them to execute their mission. And that was the first year. Then the second year, it didn't work out with the Mission Continues. So I sought out resources elsewhere. I reached out to good folks like Eric. I reached out to Josh Lyon and a couple other people. And then we were able to get those contributions together and bought, again, another $1,500 worth of bottled water. Had it delivered to their office the same exact way the year before. And it was awesome. You know, it was awesome. Like, we knew that they were taken care of in that way, at least. I'm sure there's plenty of other things that they have to worry about as far as their mission goes. So bottled water is kind of like the last thing that they should be having to worry about, you know, to help these people. So,
Was... And you guys are headed into,
it's
still kind of cool for us. But yeah. you guys have already started hitting those high heats. If somebody
that was really the reason why the conversation was even happening, because I was like, man, how are you guys like not out here with bottled water and it's like 112 degrees out here? That's crazy, you know. So that was exactly how the conversation happened with the first person that I spoke to, and then
If somebody's listening to this and they're like, hey, you know, I can throw $25, $100 or whatever towards bottled water coming up in this next season, how would they reach out to you to be able to do that?
Oh man, you know, it's really funny that you asked me that, because I literally just had conversations this morning about repeating that effort for this year with some other local businesses. So we'll be putting together a donation platform for people to contribute to, with a target amount, which is probably going to be $1,500. And then once we reach that amount, we'll go to Lowe's or Costco or whatever, and, you know, go buy some, you know, a few pallets of water to have delivered, same exact thing. But yeah, we'll put that out as soon as possible. I would say for right now, you know, if you don't mind putting my email address out there, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. However you feel comfortable.
Okay. Yeah. Feel free to email. I'll just put out our information email. So just email us at info@snvcc.org. And and then we'll keep you posted on where that's going.
And for listeners, you can reach out to us here at the Impact Hustle too, and we can put you in touch with Lester, because Lester is such you're such a gem to us here in this community, and it's so appreciated by so many people, probably even beyond your reach, you know, that you're even aware of.
Oh, thanks, man. That's super nice of you to say. Love you, man.
So how did you, I remember when I got this phone call and you hadn't completely accepted it, but you were pretty sure you were going to accept it. You're like, I got so much on my plate, but I'm leaning towards doing this project with merging vets with players. I remember that phone call, and you know, kind of talk to us about merging vets with players, because it's a really powerful concept. I mean, some people have probably seen the movie MVP, but the fact that, you know, and it's not just pl- players and veterans, it's first responders, you know, the same concept. If you think about like corporate executive CEOs, things like that, when they retire, they go through the same thing. Like it's that losing that sense of purpose. Kind of to us about MVP and how it came about that you got involved with that. And
yeah, for sure. So MVP, for those who are not familiar with MVP, it's a national nonprofit organization. MVP stands for Merging Vets and Players. We have chapter cities in currently 8 physical chapter cities, which are LA, Las Vegas, Dallas, Atlanta, New York, Seattle, Phoenix, Chicago, and I'm missing one. I'm sorry to whoever I missed it from, so 8 different chapter cities plus a virtual chapter. And basically, what we do is, you know, like, well, first, before even I explain what we do, is there's 2 demographics that MVP addresses. And it's the reason why we're called Merging Vets and Players. So the 2 demographics are the veteran community. It used to be exclusive to only combat veterans, but now it's opened up to all veterans. And then also professional athletes. So that's the reason why it's called Merging Vets and Players. And like Eric had mentioned, you know, there's actually a movie on Amazon Prime called MVP the Movie, and it's starring our founder Nate Boyer, and has a great cast of actors to kind of tell that story about MVP. But basically, the reason why those 2 demographics are of the 2 demographics that we address is because a lot of the transitional challenges that people face when leaving military service, when it comes to dealing with, you know, mental health or losing that connection and your, you know, that camaraderie that you felt while you were in the service, then you go out into the civilian sector and you no longer have that connection with your community that you're accustomed to, or even other issues that might be related to employment, you know, like as far as transferability of your skills that you developed while you were in the military. All those things can be a challenge to a person when they leave service, just like when a person who's been playing football or baseball or basketball or any other sport since they were 7, and then if they were playing football, they go and get recruited into LSU or USC or Stanford, and then they go play in the pros especially a lot of NFL players, their career might last on the average 3 years, right? So after that, what do they do, right? So like those challenges are very similar to what a person who was in the military might face. And so that's the reason why we have MVP it's a way of rebuilding community, rebuilding connection, without necessarily a clinician or a therapist in a weekly discussion. And I'll describe in a second what that weekly program looks like, which does include a discussion. But but yeah, it's really designed to be a independently run peer support program, basically, that's built up of those 2 demographics, veterans and professional athletes. So basically what we do here in Las Vegas specifically is we meet over at Extreme Couture, which is Randy Couture's gym. He's a veteran and also a very well-known athlete in the MMA, UFC space, 6-time world champion. So we meet over at Extreme Couture every Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. and we'll engage in a 1-hour workout together. Which is coach led. So it's not like everyone's just doing their own thing in their workout. Everyone's doing the same workout. So it's very much a team building component to the program. And then immediately after that workout, we'll go to the back of the gym. And Randy has 2 octagons back there in the back of Extreme Couture. We'll go into one of those octagons as a group. It's typically about 25, 30 people. We'll sit in a circle inside of the octagon and we'll just talk about life for an hour and what people have going on, how we can support each other, good or bad. You know, and it's extremely impactful. I became a member, I want to say 4.5 years ago, maybe almost 5 years ago. And I immediately saw the impact, you know, being able to share your story or not even your story, just share what's going on in life right now and have other people hear that. And one of the areas of impact that comes from it is, you know, someone will share that story without knowing that there's probably 2, 3, 4 other people in that circle who have gone through that same exact thing or are going through it right now. They just didn't verbalize it. right? But then when they hear that, then they realize that they're not alone, and that they, you know, that their problems are not unique, you know, and that they have a community that they can lean on and share their own story with. And I've seen it happen time and time again, where people come out of their shell and they feel comfortable and they feel space, that they feel safe, to be vulnerable, to be able to share that, you know, and it's very meaningful to all of us. And yeah, so that's what MVP is. And this past year, we were able to open up a second location here in Las Vegas, in the Northwest sector of town, at a place called the Academy of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's an Air Force veteran owned jiu-jitsu gym, owned by my friend Antonio Lopez. And yeah, so we were able to open that up earlier this year in collaboration with the Born Free Foundation. And yeah, so we're really just trying to expand that footprint for MVP here in the Vegas community too, because it's such an impactful program.
Man, like Brandon said, he's a man of making impact. Like, if you notice,
oh man,
it's one thing after another, after another, after another. Mm-hmm. And that's not even, we hadn't even talked about it all yet.
Yeah. And
we're gonna have to have you on again for a follow up and to be able to explain all the other things you're still doing.
Oh yeah, I'm happy to, man. Yeah, there is a lot going on. There is a lot going on for sure, but you know, like with to comment on some of the stuff you were saying, Eric, you know, with when I was considering coming on board with MVP, when they had approached me initially, I was super happy that they even considered me. And but because of the fact that I had already had so much on my plate, I was like, man, that's I don't want to do it wrong, you know, because MVP is such an important program to me personally and to the community, like anybody who's involved in that program. So I just didn't want to do it wrong. But you know, I don't know. I kind of came to the realization at that time that, like, if it was any other group, literally any other group that had approached me with that type of opportunity, I would have had to refuse it immediately, because I just knew that my bandwidth wasn't there. But because it was MVP, I was like, I'm gonna find a way to make this work, because I'm not turning this down. You know, there's no way. So,
yeah. And at that exact same time, because I remember that specific phone call, at that exact same time, you were also somewhat getting involved with some stuff with a race to a race 22. Like, you know, I don't know if you remember, you were gonna attend an event for race to a race 22, and I was looking at going and showing up to that event as well. But like, you're just constantly out there getting involved everywhere you possibly can.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's Race to a Race 22, like, they're they've been a longtime member of the chamber, and you know, we've done a couple of events with them over at their cantina.
Yep, that's where it was gonna be.
Yes, yeah. Like, they serve really good tacos up there in their cantina. But yeah, you know, like, we, you know, they have a great mission, a great organization, and that was really more tied to the chamber and the Mission Continues at the time, because it was a way for us to get people together, recognize volunteers, bring some businesses together in their setting, in that cantina setting. So yeah. But yeah, just a lot going on, you know.
No, I love it.
Yeah. It's really been the intent, you know, that would be the best way for me to describe everything. That's the reason why I'm comfortable taking on these different roles and, you know, different areas of the community, is because I feel like all of it ties together. I don't really feel like they're all that different, you know, because they all interconnect with one another. That was really the original intention of the chamber anyway, was to find a way to bring the community together in a way that everyone could intermingle with the available resources and learn about what those resources were. So that's really the main reason why I feel comfortable taking on these different hats, is because it grows the platform in the right way. So
love it.
What's the best way for people to connect with you?
I mean, definitely if you're located here in Las Vegas, just stop by one of our events, you know, like, you can, you know, that's the best way, I would say. Just go to our website, snvcc.org. We're working really hard at polishing up our events calendar and all of the content that's on our website to make it as easy as possible for people to know what's going on. We actually want our events calendar to turn into a community calendar for all the different veteran organizations and businesses to be able to post their events on one calendar. So people aren't having to go to like 17 different calendars to find out what's going on in our community. I would say, you know, like go to one of our events, but if that's not possible or feasible anytime soon, you can always reach out to us. You can send us an email at info@snvcc.org. And, you know, if you have any inquiries about what we have going on or how you can be involved or how you can join as a member, that would be a great way to reach out as well. So
we ask, in closing, we always ask everybody the same question. I say that as if we've had a million episodes, but it's our question that we are asking everybody. And before I ask that question, just to announce, because I didn't announce at the beginning, as of today, the Impact Hustle is now on any major podcast platform that you may use, whether it's Pandora, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, like any major platform you can find our podcast on. So please go subscribe and following our weekly episodes. But the question that we ask everybody, and I think this is really important for someone like you because you've done so many different things. What advice would you give, like, inspiring emerging entrepreneurs, somebody who says, hey, I want to go start something new, or hey, I just started something, but I don't know where to go or what to do. Like just somebody who is inspiring to really get a business up and going. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, so one of my favorite books is this book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Stephen Covey. Yep.
Yes, by Stephen Covey. My dad introduced me to that book when I was younger. And in that book, the second habit is referred to as beginning with the end in mind, where you know, I'm not going to go into the whole concept. You go check out the book. It's a great book. But what they describe is basically starting from what that end result looks like and then coming up with a mission statement based on what that end result would look like, describing in very fine detail what you want that end result to look like and producing a mission statement from that. And then once you produce that mission statement, then working off of that. But then I would say do that in parallel with finding a mentor with what it is that you want to accomplish, because there's no reason for you to repeat the same mistakes that somebody else had already made. You know, like you can learn a lot from people who have already walked that path and have already gone through that trial and error process and then probably had to learn the hard way why a mentor was so important, so they could probably share a lot of their insights with you. I know that that's what I experienced. You know, I probably could have done a lot better at that part of it, seeking out people to help me and guide me. But you know, like something like entrepreneurship, you know, you got to put your ego aside and you know, understand that you need help, you need support, can't do it alone. It's virtually impossible to be successful at entrepreneurship by guiding yourself, and you know, you're really, really taking the long way by doing that. So I would say find a mentor, but also identify what that end result would need to look like for you, what success looks like for you, and then work reverse engineer that process for yourself and figure out what that needs to look like.
I think that's great advice. And I would encourage people to go dive into all Stephen Covey stuff. I was actually fortunate that my best friend, it's his uncle, and I spent a lot of time with Stephen Covey before he passed away. And it was an unfortunate bike accident in Idaho that he passed away from. But the things that he put out there is like, it was very thoughtful. It really will help people improve their lives, both in business and personal. So I would definitely check it out. And I'm just putting it out there because Lester brought out the name during this podcast. But Brandon, we've got to have Monica on here for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like, I mean, we're kind of at time, but I'm sure that it's been a big change not having her in the Las Vegas community.
Yeah, it's always great to see Monica when she was out here. So hopefully sometime soon we'll see her again. So
I'm sure.
Lester, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. You really do embody the Impact Hustle name. And it's I think you're a perfect guest for our podcast.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, I'm honored and, you know, looking forward to seeing what else comes from your future episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And congratulations being the first guest that's on all streaming platforms.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
So thank you so much. And thank you for all you're doing. And I look forward to connecting on one of my trips to Vegas soon.
Absolutely. See you guys soon.
Yeah. Thank you.